You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Brief program note, join Neil Conan on Monday for a look at the government's first comprehensive report on how we spend our time, from work and childcare to leisure time. That's Monday's Talk of the Nation. We're spending our time this hour talking about disease and bioterrorism surveillance with my guests, Maren McKenna, science and medical writer at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Her new book is Beating Back the Devil on the Front Lines with the Disease Detectives of the Epidemic Intelligence Service. Shelley Hearn, executive director of the nonprofit group Trust for America's Health. She's also a visiting scholar at Bloomberg School for Public Health at Johns Hopkins University. Arnold Monto, professor of epidemiology and the director of the Bioterrorism Preparedness Initiative at the University of Michigan. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. And I said at the break that I want to talk about this bird flu that's in Asia. Dr. Monto, over 30 people have died. Is there evidence that the flu is spreading person to person?
Well, we have one incident in Thailand where it looks like the flu spread from one family member to another. There may be other situations which we do not know about because a lot of the bird flu has been occurring in rural areas in Vietnam and in Thailand. What we are concerned about is that if we continue to see avian influenza spreading from birds to humans, that a human will be infected at the same time with the bird virus and the normal human virus. And the flu virus is rather smart. It can share its genetic material, and what could come out would be a virus which would have some of the avian characteristics and some of the human characteristics, which could then spread to human to human. That's the concern, and WHO, in collaboration with CDC, has been drawing up plans to try to contain any kind of initial outbreak that might occur with human-to-human transmission.
Because that would be a particularly deadly one, would it not?
Well, if it doesn't change in its lethality from what we've been seeing in the last year or so, absolutely. What we would hope is that if it does get humanized, it might get it might be reduced in its lethality, which is probably over 60% right now.
Wow. Let me put on my amateur researcher's hat here and say, why not take the two viruses and in the lab try to see if you could do that? You know, mix them so you can get them to combine and then make a vaccine with that, you know, guess that this was how it might turn out.
Well, you don't even have to do that because what various groups in the United States and overseas have been doing is taking the H5N1, this is the avian virus that we're most worried about, and subjecting it to certain manipulation to make it less lethal so that it can be grown in eggs safely, and then to produce a vaccine against it. Now, the question is, should we then be putting that into our regular vaccine as a fourth component so we do gain population experience with it? That's one of the things that needs to be considered and will require additional effort.
You mean the vaccine we don't have now?
The vaccine we don't have, which we could have if we realize we have a global commodity here that everybody wants.
Oh, what happened? Give me a for instance. Let's say suddenly it's a pandemic. Now the companies are very interested. We've got the attention of all the pharmaceutical companies. They're going to make a lot of money on a worldwide scale. Could they make enough in time if this thing were to break out?
Well, it all depends. The production capacity of a pandemic vaccine would be determined very much by the production capacity of a regular vaccine. And also we need a fair amount of lead time, probably 6 to 8 months before we had any vaccine available. Now, the U.S. government is coming to grips with this problem, and a draft pandemic plan, a new draft pandemic plan, was actually published a month or so ago. One of the components of this plan would be to stockpile an antiviral, oseltamivir, which is the only one that works against the new avian strains. The trade name of the drug is Tamiflu. And the reason to do this is that we know that this drug, if we have sufficient quantities, can be used to try to alleviate the most severe symptoms by treating. But supply, it becomes the issue.
So we're going to wait for the pandemic first to come out and then try to tame it instead of hey, let's just make enough doses of Tamiflu and be ready for it?
Well, that's what they're working on now. Because, and again, the newspaper reports are that 1 to 2 million doses are currently being stockpiled. Unfortunately, there's a production capacity issue there as well, because we can use these drugs in normal annual influenza outbreaks in terms of trying to treat and in some cases prevent, but we haven't been doing it. So given the fact we haven't been doing it, the producing company has really not increased its ability to produce.
Ira.
Please, jump in.
What underlies your question? I'm just a little shocked here, but go ahead.
I'm shocked about a lot
what,
of things.
What underlies your question should we wait is a concern that is very, very present to people at the CDC and elsewhere in the disease detection world. Because if a pandemic begins, it is likely to move extraordinarily fast. The pandemic that everyone refers back to, the 1918 Spanish flu, which killed 675,000 Americans and about 40 million people around the world, went around the globe in 11 months at a time when the fastest transportation was trains and ocean liners.
Right.
In contrast, SARS in 2003, once it escaped from the borders of the People's Republic of China, went around the world in less than a month. And if we are only one plane ride away from any outbreak anywhere, and so the fear that we might be taken by surprise, that the diseases can move faster than we can prepare for them, is a very real concern.
Well, here we are, and if I hear Dr. Manto correctly, we have an effective drug that would help people. We have maybe the ability to make a million doses of it for 4 billion people, and no one is saying, hey, let's stockpile it early because we might need it.
Ira, you're asking the right questions, and you should be kind of scratching your head and wondering why we haven't done better. I mean, another issue to point out, the CDC is predicting that if a pandemic does hit, and as most people believe, it's not a question of if, it's when, CDC estimates we're talking about at least 2 to 7.4 million deaths worldwide. I mean, this is a very serious issue that needs to be taken seriously. And we should be making the investments now. One of the points that was raised of having, do you have the eggs to even create those vaccines to be being prepared for that six-month lead time? We don't have a year-round supply of these eggs. Those have to be ordered far in advance in the process that we're going through. It all comes back to we've not modernized, and we've not made the investments, and we've not made this a national priority in the way that we need to have it just as seriously as any other kind of terrorism event.
Dr. Manto,
and the issue of funding for hospitals comes back in there as well. I mean, not only, as Dr. Hearn mentioned, will there be that many deaths, but there will be many, many more people very seriously ill. We are within a healthcare system which just this year is exceedingly apprehensive about how many unvaccinated people are going to be ill and come to emergency rooms when emergency rooms in major cities all across the country are on diversion a significant part of the time in a hospital system that's lost something like 1,000 emergency rooms and 200,000 hospital beds over the past 10 years.
Could this flu actually spread? I don't mean to be an alarmist here. Could it be spread and disguised as the normal flu, you know, if it starts getting around, not being recognized? Dr. Manto?
It is very easy to engineer a flu vaccine, a flu virus. Mm-hmm. In fact, after recovering the RNA of the 1918 virus, workers operating in containment have been able to partially reconstruct that virus. So terrorists could create a lethal influenza virus. It doesn't seem to be a sensible thing to do because they couldn't control where it went. But nowadays, with suicide bombing and everything, we can't really get into the heads of the terrorists. So it is altogether possible that they could design an influenza virus which would have enormous impact on the population.
We're talking about diseases, viruses this hour, and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Are people thinking about this possibility?
You mean engineering?
We hear about the other kinds of, of bioterrorism prospects. We don't hear just about a bad flu that could be spread.
Well, people are considering it. The good news is that by controlling what we do know about, regular annual flu and even the potential of pandemic flu, we would be able to control flu that was engineered. But we need to be able to recognize it, and we need to have the weapons available. Mm-hmm. And the good thing about flu is that in preparing for pandemic flu with new approaches to vaccination, antivirals being available in sufficient supply, we are actually preparing for annual influenza. Now, this year you can say we're not even ready for annual influenza because we do not have sufficient vaccine available for the United States. But that can be fixed. One of the reasons we don't have sufficient quantities in the United States is that for some reason manufacturers would rather sell in other parts of the world than in the United States. There are a number of manufacturers who sell in Europe and in Asia who don't sell in the United States. Again, flu vaccine has become a global commodity. It's being bought in the newly industrialized countries and used in reasonably large quantities, so we need globally an increased production for influenza vaccine, and globally we need to look at this problem and solve it.
Talking about the flu and other communicable diseases this hour in Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, is that because the price is so low that they're getting better prices low here that we're willing to pay for it, and they're getting better prices overseas?
They are getting better prices in Europe than they are in the United States. Influenza vaccine is one of the few products that is actually cheaper in the United States than in many countries in the world. This is great in terms of the federal government paying for vaccine for older individuals. Their bill isn't quite as high, but in terms of new innovation and availability, it isn't so good.
Couldn't we, and when we have a shortage, couldn't we just go on the market and have the government try to outbid them and then pay, for it and get it to folks who need it?
Well, that could be done if we have sufficient warning. And the problem is we do not have sufficient warning. Why did Chiron have the problem it has? From what I've read in the newspapers, and I have no direct information, they took over a plant which is old and needs renovation.
But they told their stockholders just a week before or so that nothing was wrong with that. That's being investigated also.
Ira, the additional issue here is that though there is flu vaccine available in other parts of the world, some of it made by other manufacturers, those vaccines have not been licensed by the Food and Drug Administration in this country. And that's proving to be a barrier. There's at least about 1 million doses that Health Canada apparently could potentially make available, but that vaccine is not licensed for sale in the United States. And at this point, it would have to go through standard licensure, which could take about a year in order for it to be made available.
Is there something wrong with it, health-wise, safety-wise?
No, not as far as I know. Just that it has never been, they've never offered it for licensure here. I think Dr. Monto probably knows better than
me. And the burden is on the manufacturer to go through the process of getting it licensed in the United States. Mm-hmm. And again, they're not going to do this unless they think that there is a reason to do it long term. Once you're in the door, once you're licensed, changing the formula on an annual basis is not a problem. It's checked into by the Food and Drug Administration on a regular basis as the new formula is produced, but they don't have to do clinical trials or anything. So it's getting into the door that is very important.
All right. Well, our door is closing on time for this hour. I'd like to thank all of my guests, Maren McKenna, science and medical writer at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Her new book is Beating Back the Devil, on the front lines with the disease detectives of the Epidemic Intelligence Service. Thank you for joining us, Maren.
My pleasure to be here.
Shelley Hearn, the executive director of the nonprofit group Trust for America's Health. She's also a visiting scholar at the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University. And Arnold Monto, professor of epidemiology and the director of the University of Michigan's Bioterrorism Preparative Initiative. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank
you. Bye-bye.
Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galek, Paul Masiello, Enrico Cardi in New York, and Suzanne Capoludo in Atlanta. And we had help today from Imperial Librarians Kim Molesky and Alphonse Finn. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flato in New York.